Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Good afternoon. Just before I start speaking from my own personal perspective, just because it was something that was discussed before the lunch break, and here I'll talk from Chamber's perspective. And I would like to refer to those that were speaking on behalf of NGOs, and the defense also raised that issue about the status of victims or the status of NGOs representing victims in those preliminary stages of ICC proceedings. And there's a very ancient decision of the appeals chamber in the DRC situation, number 556 of the 19th of December of 2008, where the appeals chamber already at that time determined that there's no procedural status at the investigation stage for victims. Thus, no procedural status under Article 68 of the Rome Statute. And the authority to conduct investigations is vested exclusively in the office of the prosecutor. It, however, said that victims had other ways to convey information to the prosecution, and it referred to Article 15.3 and 19.3 of the Rome Statute, but it said that there were other avenues apart from those. So it's important to keep in mind. That was for investigations, and one would also interpret it as being applicable to even a more preliminary stage as the PEs are. So just that. From now on, then, I will not speak in my capacity as legal officer from chambers at the ICC, but on my personal capacity, and as having written my PhD on children and the ICC, but I actually didn't touch upon preliminary examination, so this was the best opportunity to do so. So thank you for the organizers for inviting me to come here today and to present my article. Now, on November 2016, the Office of the Prosecutor adopted its policy on children. This is definitely a welcome development, not only because it appears to admit that there is room for improvement, given lessons learned of the first cases before the ICC, namely Lubanga, but most importantly because it clearly goes beyond the child recruitment cases. The OTP policy talks about other crimes that may target children, or also the effects that crimes in general under the jurisdiction of the court have on the children from a certain situation. It's clear that it aims to include a child-sensitive approach in the current work of the OTP and in the future work of the OTP. However, as one of the speakers today said, it's important not only what the prosecution says, but what it will do with this policy paper. And it is crucial to determine then how can the OTP will implement its policy when it carries out preliminary examinations. The policy refers succinctly to the preliminary examinations, but it's important to establish an Article 53 analysis that really includes this policy. Why? Because preliminary examinations are the gateway to an investigation. They will eventually trickle down to the selection of cases against individuals for specific crimes. And they may ultimately lead to reparations if there is a conviction. Thus, if the initial steps exclude children from the equation, they will most likely not benefit from the judicial redress. Also, a child-centered analysis may not always favor ICC proceedings. For example, if the OTP takes a child-centered approach as regards certain preliminary examinations in the future or in present, it might come to a determination that an ICC investigation is not in the best interests of the child victims or not in the interest of justice vis-a-vis the children as recipients of that justice. So first, let's talk about quality of the information, because we're talking about quality control of preliminary examinations. Pursuant to Article 15.1 of the statute, the prosecutor may initiate investigations on the basis of information received. This information can certainly be provided by children's rights organizations, and I'm certain that this has been the case in many cases, but also by general organizations, more general in the sense of the scope, that also present a child's rights perspective in their information. But there will be, and there certainly have been, communications that will typically relate to the situation in general. Some of them will specifically talk about child recruitment cases because they target children. But in the more general context, it is likely that children, as often misinformed and misrepresented in an adult-centered society, will not automatically be included in the information received by the prosecutor. For example, let's think about post-election violence information received in the last years. They will generally focus on the adult population of victims. The same stands as regards the UN Security Council referrals or state referrals, which will sometimes focus on what happening or is happening in general in the territory of a state party and may exclude specific reference to the children within that affected general population. So on the one hand, the OTP should receive from organizations and other information providers views on a given situation in any country that are child sensitive. On the other hand, it would be useful if these organizations would have appropriate tools and training so that communications are relevant for potential international criminal proceedings. This is definitely not a mandate of the ICC to train or to give those tools to the NGOs. But some information could definitely facilitate their work and could make their information for the ICC more useful and more meaningful, thus ultimately helping the ICC in fulfilling its own mandate. So it's not about receiving just any communication under Article 15, but quality of information that informs about crimes affecting children, but also that they meet the standards for eventual trial proceedings. So it's not only quality of information in the scope, but also in its source. Partial information under Article 15 that is not further complemented or completed by impartial and inclusive information pursuant to Article 15.2 of the statute may result in incomplete and biased decisions by the OTP in the context of preliminary examinations. And when I say incomplete and biased is when they exclude a significant part of the population of victims from both sides of a conflict. This is not about targeting one side of the conflict or other. It is just about excluding an entire segment of the population of both sides or three sides of a potential conflict. Moreover, from the receiving point of view, the OTP should have specialized and trained staff that will be able to adequately process that information that eventually would be child sensitive, so that the child's perspective, for example, that an NGO might have when presenting information under Article 15 is not lost in the process of the preliminary examinations. Also, if the OTP staff is duly trained on human rights or specifically children's rights, if and when communications or information received under Article 15 are discriminatory or biased in the sense that they exclude part of the population, they will then seek further information. This is part of the series of the information received, that it doesn't exclude and is not biased against a part of the population. Now, also as regards quality, is the analysis of Article 53. And if that analysis excludes also the effects that the justice of the ICC might have on a particular child population, for example, or when it refers to the interests of victims, it excludes the interest of those child victims, it might also be incomplete. Now, the OTP's policy paper on children adopted a child-centered approach. That is, where children's best interests are taken into consideration, but not necessarily prevail vis-a-vis other interests. However, it is my opinion that in applying and interpreting its policy paper, it should still endeavor to have a child rights approach. That is, where children's interests will be, when possible for the OTP, also recognized and primordial. And this is also because Article 21.3 of the statute demands all parties involved in ICC proceedings to apply and interpret the law pursuant to internationally recognized human rights. Among them, there are some primordial children's rights that could be included. Now, what are these internationally recognized human rights as regards children? It is my view that at least the minimum would be the four guiding principles of the Convention on the Rights of the Child: the best interest of the child, the right to life, survival, and development, the respect of views of children according to their age and maturity, and the right to non-discrimination. There are more, but this would be the bare minimum. Also, how do we apply these in preliminary examinations? For example, as regards gravity, the policy paper on children states that in general, crimes committed against or affecting children are particularly grave. In fact, in the policy paper, it is stated that the OTP will ensure that an assessment of the impact of alleged crimes on children is incorporated into its analysis of the gravity of potential cases. This affirmation and assurance of the OTP is in accordance with the guiding principle of children's right to life, survival, and development. Any crime that affects that principle right will be the most grave. But most of the crimes, if not all of the crimes within the jurisdiction of the court will attempt against this core principle of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. The fact that information received by the OTP refers to crimes against or affecting children is relevant, thus, for the gravity analysis that it has to make under Article 53. For example, for the scale of the crime, number of children directly or indirectly affected by crimes committed, allegedly committed, the manner, if children are deliberately targeted, or cruelty standards, for example. If we're going to talk about cruelty, a crime can have different cruelty standards depending on whether the victim is a child or an adult. This is thus all relevant for the gravity assessment under Article 53. Finally, gravity also examines the impact of crimes on victims and communities. Analyzing the impact of crimes vis-a-vis children in a community will almost always shift the balance in favor of gravity, as harm caused to children have long-lasting effects in their lives and may be easily passed down to other generations. For example, the OTP policy specifically refers to the notion of a child's life plan as developed by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. Another element that can be and should be analyzed from a child's rights perspective is the interest of victims. It is specifically referred to in Article 53, and Articles 3 and 12 of the Convention on the Rights of the Child refer to the best interest of the child and also that possibility that should be given to the child to express his or her views. Of course, in an ICC situation, we will not have one child, but a group of children. And the Committee on the Rights of the Children have also developed guidelines on how to hear the views of children when considered as a group. All preliminary examinations will concern children of the affected communities, and thus the best interests of the child have to be taken into consideration. But it's not just mentioning it or just making referral to the policy. The OTP must show in its decision under Article 53 that the right has been explicitly taken into account and explain how the right has been respected in a decision. For example, which criteria it based on and how the interests of children were weighed against other competing interests. But how can the OTP do this? To determine the best interest of the child in an ICC situation, one of the methods is self-evidently to seek the children's views under Article 12 of the CRC. However, given the preliminary stage of the proceedings, one can think that direct exposure with the ICC may not be in the children's best interest. However, leaving them out is also not a possibility. Thus, the CRC committee has established that the state, but in this case it would be the OTP, would have to find methods in order to seek the views of the groups of children without affecting their security. One, for example, could be having people acting on behalf of children, NGOs or a special children's rights organization or committee on the rights of the child. When they have done observations in a certain country situation, they could be sought for views on how children have been affected in a particular situation. Finally, the interest of justice. The CRC provides that children shall be heard in any judicial and administrative proceedings affecting them. The OTP preliminary examinations are the eve of judicial proceedings before the ICC, but they also will inevitably have an impact on both judicial and administrative procedures, including non-judicial transitional justice mechanisms, both domestically and also internationally. Thus, an analysis of Article 53.1c from a human rights perspective, something that is required under Article 21.3 of the statute, requires the prosecutor to balance among interests the recognized human rights of children victims of a situation, but also children of a situation country in general, to safety, physical and moral well-being, fair trial and reparations. Such an analysis, depending on each situation, could lead the OTP to consider a wider approach to the concept of interest of justice in favor of non-judicial or traditional mechanisms of justice that could address some of the aforesaid human rights in a matter that is in the best interest of the group of children in a given situation. For example, a non-judicial justice mechanism that would address the crimes more expeditiously or in a more child-friendly manner could be an example. However, this would have to be assessed carefully and in a case-by-case basis and taken into account all the elements I have addressed above, but also other elements that I will hopefully address in my chapter with more time than now. Another important consideration when talking about children in preliminary examinations is that of time. The Committee on the Rights of the Child has established that the passing of time is not the same for children and adults, and has affirmed that delays in or prolonged decision-making have particularly adverse effects on children as they evolve. Hence, a non-decision under Article 53 or delayed decisions may be contrary to the best interest of children concerned in specific cases. Effects on children should be pondered when the OTP extends a preliminary examination for a very long period of time. A non-decision is in itself a choice of the prosecutor, but it will have effects, either negative or positive, that must be pondered, preferably in a transparent manner, particularly when it involves children. The children's policy affirms that there is a strong presumption that investigations and prosecutions of crimes affecting children are in the interest of justice. The OTP should also take into consideration the timing of these preliminary examinations, which in crimes dealing with children should be expeditiously considered in order to preserve the relevant evidence, but also to ultimately grant timely reparations to child victims if there is a conviction. Given their age and vulnerability, the justice delayed, justice denied motto is strikingly applicable in these cases. Finally, as part of this broader system of protection of human rights, because although criminal in nature, the ICC was established to protect human beings from heinous crimes, if and when the OTP decides not to open an investigation, it could endeavor that this information received by the office is transmitted to other mechanisms that could be appropriate to address the victims. For example, as regards children's rights violations, information received could be relevant and referred to, for example, the Committee on the Rights of the Child or regional human rights courts. But also there, timing is important, because as long as something is pending before the ICC, these other regional or human rights mechanisms might not want to get involved. This is important as the OTP may receive information about human rights violations that, although not within the ICC jurisdiction, is within its general mandate and the object and purpose of this ICC court to combat impunity against the most heinous crimes. For example, even if they're committed outside the jurisdiction of the court, it could still refer to the appropriate mechanism. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.